and welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. We hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which you go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. And welcome. It's time for episode 85 of the All Japan Women Classics here on the AJW Destiny podcast. If you're listening on the RLR podcast proper, that Red Leaf Retrocast, welcome to this section. And if you're listening on All Japan Women Destiny, well, we're in for a treat. So this was going to be like a two or three parter. Not really exactly sure how the classics had this lineup. The source I have with the match listings has 85 through 88 blank, and no other source has them listed. But this show was, well, incredible. And I was gonna split this up between multiple shows, at least two parts. And what ended up happening was I had to watch the whole show. I had to watch it all in its entirety. I had to watch every match. What happened was first I watched the classics, and then if I got really into a match, I watched it again in its entirety on YouTube, which you can find from various YouTube channels that have, at this point in time, the DVDs like fully uploaded, and they're really cool to watch. They like this one, for example, for the Saint Final Battle 93 show that we're covering here. It had a lot of like pre-match interviews. The whole show started off with them like training, running the ropes, hitting their LCOs, hitting some moves. Aja Kong's like upside down on a jungle gym doing sit-ups. Pretty just interesting stuff. But yes, this is AJW Saint Final Battle 1993 from Sumo Hall, the Ryogoku Kokugekigan, attendance of 11,500. Not exactly quite sold out, but basically sold out. December 6th, 1993. Incredible show. Just absolutely astonishing. And one of the big critiques heading into the show, whether it's you read up on The Observer or some other reviews that you can find online, whether that's the Blog of Doom or I would say the... You know, I'm going to say it, the less informed, I would really put the less informed in the sense of the lack of context and understanding of what was really going on at the time. Like I'm pulling up one here from girlswithguns.org, And there, I would say there's a big lack of context of what exactly was happening at the time. That's just one example. There's many other reviews you can look up. I'm just using that as an example because it's one of the first that you can find, at least in the Google search engine I'm doing. And if I want to go through move for move, I could absolutely do that for a lot of these matches. But I would say the crux and the most important things coming out of the show is whether these matches are good or bad, interesting, what's going to happen afterwards, and obviously, the retirement of Akira Hokuto. What a year 1993 has been. There's still going to be one more show after this for 1993 in terms of All Japan Women. But this 92-93 stretch, and it really all began this new rise, this new boom period, this new peak with All Japan Women, with the efforts of Bull Nakano as champion through that transition period between the Crush Gals and now. Putting over Aja Kong, I think, was very important to the rise of that. And really the coming out party of Akira Hokuto. She's back from that neck injury. She gets an immediate push out of the gate. She goes to Mexico, comes back with this ninja samurai type gimmick with the lucha-esque background to her. Really embraces this demon look over time and evolves into what we know now as the Dangerous Queen. And Akira Hokuto's rise to this over the last 3 years. I mean, if you want to argue she was one of the better women workers before that, you could absolutely do that. It wasn't just Bull Nakano. She was the number two in this promotion, even when she was kind of in her lifeguard Hisako Uno gear that we can reference over and over again. I'll reference that tag league where her and Suzuka Minami of the Marine Wolves were a bloody mess and then had to go back out there and face off against Kokaku Domei there, the Bull Nakano type squad, and just battle for their lives. That's a very memorable 80s match. But this run from 1991, 92, 93, Hokuto just kept getting better, and despite her like breaking her back, tearing up her knee multiple times over the last few years, to the point where now she's at the end of this year, she's had surgery coming out of the Wrestling Queendom show, vacating the white belt, the All Pacific title. I think that was her third or second time winning it. All kind of culminates for these last December shows where she's having her rematch against Shinobu Kandori of LLPW. And if you've liked these Kandori matches with Hokuto, might I point you on over to the Patreon, patreon.com/redleafretrocast, for the LLPW reviews each and every month. And upon this one, one just came out a couple days ago, which is the build to the Bull Nakano Kandori chain match, which will be featured next month. Very exciting there. So yeah, back to Saint Final Battle. Before I kind of race through this giant card, it is, of course, a very big interpromotional show. That is the deal of these times, where we have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 matches on this card. And there's a lot of them that eclipse that 15-minute mark, or get damn close to it. It's a long show, it's a trek, it's a journey. And if you got the time where you can kind of pick at it like I did over two sittings, man, it's a show worth investing in. I'm going to say it. I think this is the show of the year for 1993. And yes, that does include the two Dream Slam shows. I think this show blew those out of the water in terms of kind of the investment and the context of the time. And, you know, we're going to go through the Observer here and what a few other people say. But, you know, I'll keep referencing my man over here, somebody I don't know, but the Blog of Doom, he agrees with me that the Saint Final Battle of 93 is kind of the show of the year with, if I'm just referencing his star ratings and going by his words, like, that's not taking away anything from Dream Slam. I thought both those shows were incredible in their own right. But man, if I was old enough to vote in those Observer Awards, or at least had access to AJW, like I do now, I'd be voting Saint Final Battle 1, Dream Slam 1, 2, and Dream Slam 2 in the number 3 spot for shows of the year. This is, you know, I can reference 1985, 86 all I want with AJW. There are parts of 1979 I really like with the Jackie Sato era. But when it comes to a full year and just excitement and rise of stars, especially in the sense of Akira Hokuto, this is one of my favorite years in AJW I've experienced. It's tough for me to lose that that it's just a different feeling. You know, the Dump Matsumoto and Chigusa Nagayo era, that's gone and in the past. You know, that's the Devil Masami Jaguar Yokota matches, gone into the past. That was a good mixture of styles and characters and wrestlers of the 80s. And now we're in a different era, and I've really kind of fallen in love with this era of AJW. And this Saint Final Battle was a great kind of climax to all that this has entailed. And I think also a lot of that has to do with I've followed along with LLPW in 93. And now I'm halfway through 94 over on the Patreon, and I know those wrestlers. I'm invested in them. I get a lot out of them. Over the course of this 93, I've also gotten to know the FMW wrestlers. I already kind of knew a lot about the JWP with the Mayumi Ozakis and the Kansais of the world, but you know, with people like Kandi Okotsu coming up in the young sense, and you know, you got Cutie Suzuki and company, Plum Mariko, kind of rounding out that roster. This is the difference between the interpromotional stuff in 1993 compared to what's trying to be done in 2022 and 2023 in Stardom. Like wrestling is hot in 1993. It's very, very hot. New Japan's breaking their own attendance records. All Japan's doing very well. Even FMW is selling out stadiums. You got Vader in UWFI. You got Onita popping off. You know, they're in wrestling in Japan is very hot. So I'm going to head on over to the December 20th, 1993 Observer newsletter, because he writes a lot about what's going on right here. And for context, the next show is the Tag League Finals, which was a tape trader's dream at the time, because it has the back-to-back, I believe it's 5-star matches for the Tag League Finals in AJW. But what's happened here is Akira Hokuto has announced her retirement. It's a story that's well-known behind the scenes at the time. All the magazines were covering it. Meltzer was covering it himself. And this is why he's so important in the wrestling coverage landscape, at least in the English sense, is that him and the reader base, if it wasn't for him, the Japanese wrestling scene wouldn't get its respect and dues that it would in the grand scheme. It would just be Western wrestling all the time, every day, with an occasional match that pops off and gets some buzz. So that, like, if he didn't cover AJW, who would have at the time is the bigger question. I would be a betting man to say it wouldn't have. It wouldn't have. You know, you could look at Wade Keller and the Torch, and maybe some things would make a round as the tape trading, but I digress. Akira Hokuto retires, and I'll read this more through for the next episode, but I will skip all the way to the end where he writes something quite interesting here, where and so it's this bottom half to this section. although by 1992, Kyoko Inoue and Manami Toyota had improved to the point where all three had a lot of supporters as to who was really the best, in 1993, Akira Hokuto's spirit became well known throughout wrestling, even though it was nothing new, for working every night with severe injuries. Although even a year or two earlier, she was nicknamed the Mummy because she was always taped up because of the constant elbow and shoulder injuries, because she continually did nightly high-risk moves rather than take it easy and let her injuries heal. I'll stop there. This, of course, is leading to her retirement now at such a young age. Now, obviously, we know she moves to Mexico, goes through her first marriage. She wrestles a few CMLL shots while she's there. She's sort of healing up, and hey, she'll come back, boys. Don't you worry. We're not done with Akira Hokuto, but she does become a Bull Nakano-esque special attraction. Okay, I continue on. Even though it was known for most of the year that she would be retiring, the promotion actually gave her the biggest push of her career, and she was easily the most popular woman wrestler in the world, particularly after her legendary match at Dream Slam 1 against Shinobu Kandori. Hokuto will finish highly in both Japanese balloting and observer balloting for Wrestler of the Year this year, a rarity for a woman. It is expected that a major retirement ceremony, as is the tradition for the top stars of All Japan Women's Promotion, will take place for Akira Hokuto on March 27th, 1994 at the Yokohama Arena. Put that in your back pocket, ladies and gentlemen. That is important because, well, there's another promotion that's going to run Yokohama Arena on an anniversary, and that's Stardom in 2023 here. So, it lines up with the Akira Hokuto retirement. It lines up with Dream Slam 1, which took place on, I believe that was April. Oh, what date was that? That was April 2nd. So, they're kind of right in line with each other. So, very appropriate. Now, just to give you some more context for fun, for funsies, this is what was also going on in 1993 as AJW was popping off, doing great. They're putting on Show of the Year contenders left and right throughout 1993. In the other world of wrestling, the Supreme Court rules Titan. That's WWE. rumors and news as the United States Supreme Court ruled Monday morning in a case totally unrelated to the U.S. government versus Vince McMahon and Titan Sports as to the constitutionality of drug property seizures. Yes, it is the steroid trials. In other news, Sid Vicious and the British Bulldog are fired by WCW in relation to the Sid Vicious stabbing incident back in October in England with Arn Anderson. Took them months. Bobby Heenan and Kurt Hennig leave the WWF for WCW. Takata and Vader in the UWFI draw 46,000 fans to the Jingo Stadium. Misawa and Kobashi win the tag league in AJW. Let's see, then they do a lot more notes. There's a riot in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Jim Cornette's, due to racial allegations and hate crimes. What a crazy year. That's only in the recent news. So we go back to Saint Final Battle as Meltzer writes a very good paragraph here that I really enjoy. And it's a good summary of what the show entailed. And I'm just going to read this verbatim. I might take some stops and throw my thoughts in there. But this is for you guys, the listeners. And it's a good mark on history, so I shall continue. Saint Final Battle. All Japan Women finished off its most successful big show year ever by selling out the 11,500-seat Tokyo Sumo Hall for a card billed as Saint Final Battle on December 6th. The five-hour marathon show was headlined by rematches of the most remembered match from both Dream Slam 1 and 2 in April, in both cases with the losers from Dream Slam prevailing. Okay, I'll stop. I think that's good booking, and I think the modern scene could do a lot of that if you're going to do interpromotional stuff. I think you got to play ball, and you got to go both ways. I think you got to at least do two matches, especially if the match comes across as very good and people want to see that rematch. In the case of this Kandori Hokuto and the Toyota Yamada against Kansai Ozaki matches, that's great, and I'm looking forward to seeing what will be the Stardom move in this case. But like I keep saying and referencing, the companies outside Stardom are not hot, and they're not as relevant to make these interpromotional things really matter. So the fandom treats it differently as they would in 1993. Okay. Shinobu Kandori beat Akira Hokuto in the main event. The original plan was for this to be a hair versus hair match, but tickets were selling so well, the Matsunagas decided there was no need to put the stipulation in that would require Hokuto to lose her hair at the end when the show was going to sell out anyway. So I actually tried to research this a little bit more. I threw in the word Matsunaga there because it said promoters, okay? And that's where it was interesting. Supposedly, and I had conflicting sources here, whether it was a Kayfabe Weekly Pro episode, magazine article where it was a Rossi Ogawa interview referencing the Matsunagas in his efforts to convince the Matsunagas to not put the hair on the line like they would have in the mid-80s, because maybe they could even do a third match down the line if Akira Hokuto decided to not retire. So I found that interesting, and I'm willing to be a betting man on the believing side of that case. But again, not a lot of sources there. I have really nothing to back it up. It's just kind of my gut feeling, and I'm just kind of believing the words, essentially, the rumors of what was going on. But also, like, I think they're right that there was no need to put Hokuto's hair on the line when you already sold the tickets. That's an old, like, Hulk Hogan thing, is you already got him in the building, brother. Let's try to sell, let's try to get more money with another match when you can do a stipulation or something, when that's more needed to kind of fill in the gap. You got him for the first time, they clearly got him again for the second time. Hell, they could even go a third now that they've gone 50-50. Okay, I continue. In the other match, Manami Toyota and Toshi Yamada regained the 3WA tag team titles, beating Dynamite Kansai and Mayu Mizaki in 25 minutes, 33 seconds, while Aja Kong retained her 3WA title, beating FMW's top woman wrestler, Megumi Kudo, in 22 minutes, 34 seconds. And he goes on, judging from photos, it appeared the top two matches were excellent, although live reports didn't indicate either match was the caliber of their previous classic matches. Oh, ho, ho. Hold that thought. Two titles changed hands in the undercard to keep the promotion versus promotion feud alive, as All Japan Women dropped the titles to the AJW tag titles to wrestlers from other groups. Japanese junior champ Chiprita Osari lost her title to JWP's Kandi Okotsu, while Japanese tag champ Saki Asagawa and Kaoru Ito lost their titles to LLPW's Miki Honda and Yasha Kurenai. And a few days before the show, an even bigger announcement was made that the group has booked officially the Tokyo Dome for November 20th, 1994, which is a huge risk. All Japan Women, with tons of publicity and months of hype, legitimately sold out this Yokohama arena, 16,500 seats, but that was with the return of every major star in company history for the promotion, for cameos, and the return to the ring of one Chigusa Nagayo, who was the biggest superstar in the history of Japanese women's wrestling. So I'll stop there. I will reference a little teaser from the LLPW review, where we're halfway through the year, and the card finally started taking place, where they're announcing kind of a lot of the undercard, and they're teasing at Akira Hokuto coming out of retirement match, going for the title. That's a rumor halfway through 1994. So yes, it is certainly a major risk that they're doing that, but it's also going to create tons of hype and publicity, and like I said in the LLPW reviews, if you research it a little bit more, you end up seeing a trickle-down effect to JWP and LLPW as AJW continues a lot of momentum coming out of 1993. And announcing something like that is a rarity, and it's something like All Japan Pro Wrestling couldn't even do at the time. Well, they were kind of sticking to the Budokan, but you get the idea. I continue on with the Meltzer paragraph. Even that Dream Slam 1, which may go down in history as the greatest wrestling show of all time, needed a huge walk-up to sell out. The ability to come back and easily sell out Sumo Hall with a killer lineup after some of the other big shows followed, failed to sell out with weaker lineup shows. The potential with the right lineup to still draw 10,000 plus with high ticket prices. It's quite another thing to go into a 60,000 seat building and run a profitable show. Although just going into the Dome and attempting such an undertaking will bring with it a lot of mainstream publicity. It's also well known that the Dome is the absolute worst building in the world to watch pro wrestling, and the women's appeal, more than any other group in Japan, is based on the ability to view incredible live matches. That is super funny coming from the Big Dave Man. Way back in 1993, he's writing that, and he continually references that today, in the sense that it's the worst building to run a show in. But the interesting kind of quip I'm taking here is he says All Japan women do the awesome live matches, while if we reference today's modern wrestling, that's kind of all you see, right? It's all about the greatest matches you're seeing, and it's really hard to view. So maybe that's a different mindset now. And then he references, he finishes up, New Japan's annual sellouts are largely due to the show now being traditional rather than fans going and expecting the greatest wrestling show they've ever seen. Well, welcome to 2023. Phenomenal. Phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. So if you remember earlier, one Dave Meltzer in the Akira Hokuto retirement blurb said that she is going to be a kind of a shoo-in for Observer Awards when it comes to 1993 in various categories. And I'm actually going to run through some of these awards in which AJW played a role. I'm not going to go through every single one. But Wrestler of the Year, he only did a top five at the time. Akira Hokuto came in seventh with 241 first place votes. Actually, it looks like total votes. Right behind Mitsuhiro Misawa, it went to Vader, Kobashi, Bret Hart, Kawada, Ric Flair, Misawa, Hokuto, Hansen, Nobuhiko Takada, and then Manami Toyota. So that's 6, 7, 8, 9. So Manami Toyota got 10th. So that's two women in the top 10 for the Observer Awards in 1993. Kind of unparalleled. So you would think, okay, she was very outstanding. Akira Hokuto, kind of a Wrestler of the Year contender there. If we compare that today, Shuri, Utami, Julia kind of cracking top 10s, getting as high as 5th 2 years in a row. So that should say something about the ability of these wrestlers today and the, I would say, just higher general exposure that you're able to access a lot of this today. I think that matters. Most outstanding wrestler, Manami Toyota, second place behind Kenta Kobashi. It wasn't close, but she also cleared Kawada and Liger as most outstanding. Let's see, and then I move on to, let's see, nothing best babyface, nothing best heel, feud of the year, nothing from AJW, tag team of the year, Manami Toyota and Toshi Yamada got third, pretty handily there. It really drops off. So what was interesting was Misawa and Kobashi got fourth, not even close to the top three, unlike Yamada and Toyota, which if it looked like they got some more votes, they would have actually passed up Tom Pritchard and Jimmy Del Rey that year. So, again, the tape trading and whatnot and the exposure does play a factor here, but they're still doing very, very well. Most improved, Mayu Miyazaki gets an honorable mention, which I really appreciated there. And then I'm actually going to skip all the way to the bottom here where Manami Toyota got best technical. She also got third in best high flying behind Liger and Rey Mysterio Jr. Let's see. No woman in most overrated. Most underrated. Nobody there, but then here we go, here we go, here we go. Best promotion. Number one, barely beating out number two by only 200 points. with less first place votes. Number one best promotion of the year, 1993, All Japan Pro Wrestling. And number two, All Japan Women. So this really reminds me a lot of the last couple years, 2021 and 2022, in which Stardom got number two behind All Elite Wrestling. It's just what promotion is producing the best matches, what promotion has the most buzz in terms of the observer, and All Japan Women, much like Stardom, has just really taken, it's really taken people into viewing something different and unique and something very compelling and great. So it's when I'm comparing the two in my head and the wrestlers of today, you know, I like to do the Shuri is better than Yamada. Shuri's been at this for 3 years now in Stardom. Same with Julia and Utami, and Mayu Iwatani's kind of taken a backseat as those stars are being made. But like, these are all big deals, and it's going to come a time, and it's going to come fast. I mean, we're in year four, and if you want to argue year five, if you want to include 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, yeah, this would be year five of these women really gaining the exposure and star power that they need for to be the number two promotion in Japan, be the number two promotion in something like the Observer Awards. Stardom is essentially, they have essentially caught up in the sense of recognition to people like us in the wrestling world that All Japan Women did. Now they just need to start filling up these arenas to the extent that they did. I'm not saying that they need to fill up the Tokyo Dome and get 60,000 people in there, but you know, I want to see a 5,000, 10,000 seat filler in due time. Who knows if or when they're capable of doing such a thing, especially in today's environment. That's no easy feat. But you know, I think a direct comparison, you know, at this point isn't unheard of. That's kind of what I'm going at. Okay. What do you say we review this show 30 minutes into this little section here, eh? So this is, again, episode 85. Hope I got that number right. At Sumo Hall, Saint Final Battle, 1993. Not Wrestler of the Year, Akira Hokuto, in the main event, with no titles on the line, no hair on the line, just straight grudge match with the Dream Slam 2 main event, if I have my... Is that right? I think it was Dream Slam 2, because the FMW match was Dream Slam 1 in the main. And yes, it was Dream Slam 2 main event, which, remember, it got 5 stars. While the Hokuto Kandori match only got 4.75. A lot of people say it's a 5-star match as well. So, quickly going through, the opener, Leo Kitamura and Utako Hozumi defeating Chikako Shiratori and Tomoko Watanabe, 9:36. Look, this was okay. It's a nice little opener. I don't think we need to go into more. We're 30 minutes into this sucker. We have a little person match, a midget match, a small human match. I don't know. Little Frankie defeats Mr. Buddha Man in 5 minutes. It's funny, I just reviewed an AWA show. I did release it on the Patreon. Wrestle Rock 86, and there was also a little person match, like second from the bottom. Very strange. Very strange. AJW Junior title on the line. Candy Okatsu defeats Chiprita Asari, new champion, 12-17. This was very enjoyable. Little messy at times because it's still, you know, people a couple years into their career or less. But in terms of Chiprita Asari, this girl is just very dynamic and super exciting. And watching her get better and better is going to be extremely enjoyable over the next couple years. What wasn't cool was Asari going for that Sky Twister press and her landing essentially corkscrew head first on the mat, and Candy Okatsu just kind of rapidly pins her afterwards to win the title. I thought this woman broke her neck, scared the hell out of me, scared everyone watching with me in the Discord chat at Red Leaf Redcast. You want in? Let me know. DM me on Twitter at BowlingJD. This... this was Kandi Okatsu. She's got a little good ground game to her. She's got good babyface fire. You like to see what's in store for her. She doesn't look out of place when she's in there with like Cutie Suzuki, for example, or Plum Mariko. I think she's got a little bit of a higher ceiling than Plum Mariko at the time. At this time also, Plum Mariko's really starting to get a lot of concussions, and it's a very sad story what ends up happening to her over the next 4 to 5 years. But we know the history on that, and if you don't, I guess you can look that sad story up. But Kandi Okatsu, her and Asari just kind of work together very well. The nice little submission game got Asari to really fire up and really start hitting, you know, the handspring mule kick, and really getting up for various crossbodies, whatnots. It's this is that kind of match where you can kind of plop it into 2023. And it really wouldn't seem out of place with the size of the wrestlers. Maybe the gear looks a little different, but very fast paced, very enjoyable. Shame that Asari almost died for our sins in that match. Next match, Japanese tag titles on the line. They were vacant heading into this sucker. It's Kaori Ito and Saki Asagawa trying to win these things from Miki Honda and Yashikura and I. 15 minutes, 27 seconds this went. Not the best worked match you'll ever see. Big Dave, you all gave it only 3.5. I will go on over to the blog of Doom here. Let's see what he did. Let's see what he gave this. He went 2.5 on the opener. He went a fourth of a star on the little person match. Asari and Kandi Okatsu, you only went 2.5? Well, I mean, average. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with 2.5, especially at this time. For this one, for this AJW tag, he went 3 stars. I think that's also fair. Look, Kaori Ito, victory roll, double foot stomps. She did like 14 of these double foot stomps. She did, I think, 3 jumping hip attacks. Very limited in her game. She tries the corkscrew senton. Totally misses. She just totally misses everybody. I think it was on Miki Honda. Miki Honda was just very much well above everyone else in this match, at least from the in-ring part of her game. But Saki Asagawa, she kind of hangs in there. Saki Asagawa has been working through injuries through this second half of the year, and it kind of shows she's really stepped off the gas a little bit. And when she's in tags like this, we've seen her come in for a hot tag. She does one jumping heel kick and then kind of gets right back out there. So Kaori Ito, at least in terms of this tag team throughout the year, has really done a lot of the quote-unquote heavy lifting, even though she doesn't really have the in-ring game to justify her being in the ring that long. I mean, for someone who's really gotten a lot of shine at 93 in Kaori Ito's case, she hasn't really developed into anything other than what she was in her rookie form. The gear's not getting better. The look doesn't get better. Meanwhile, you see someone like a Yashikura and I, whose ring game is very limited. She's making up for it with a lot of character work. She didn't do a lot of the heel stuff in this match in particular, even if you watch the full version outside of the classic episodes. There isn't much to really shoulder on here. There was some good decent near falls. It was a lot of like German suplexes for near falls for Honda. Kuranai's hitting choke slams. Even Saki Hasegawa comes off the top with like a choke slam deal, which was cool. I didn't hate this match. I think 3 stars is very fair for this. And the new champions. I'm a big Miki Honda fan. Look, she had the most interesting gear in this. She had the one pant leg, the very floral design on the swimsuit. I give this thumbs up, no doubt. Combat Toyota defeats Suzuka Minami 13:54. Let's see here. I'm gonna pull up a short recap of this one. Let's see. I didn't really like this one very much at all. Look, Asuzuka Minami singles match is going to be very grounded. She's very technical based in trying to get like knee locks in and working the leg and combat Toyota. She is not about this selling, and she's very much Onita's pick to get on these cards and be a big body bruiser type that's going to run people over. The woman gets gassed very quick. She can't really work all that well. I mean, look, she's trained by Onita, who does death matches for his income. But I just didn't think this match worked very well. I think the near falls weren't all that good either. There's a lot of just ugly moves that don't really hit right. I've seen it written as power versus skill. Not so much David and Goliath. It was just someone that's trying a technical game in Suzuka Minami to a person that's not good at selling. And it just leads to moments of nobody kind of working with each other. And look, Suzuka Minami's kind of your upper echelon kind of wall that people go from the mid card to the upper card. And I think that's a good spot for her. I got no problem with that. And if FMW needs a bone thrown their way, then yeah, beating someone of her caliber, I think works fine. Don't really have a Big Dave star rating here, but the Blog of Doom went 3 3/4. I don't agree with that at all. I enjoyed that much less than even the little AJW tag title match. Okay. The next match on the card is, LCO teaming with Bull Nakano taking on the JWP team of Cutie Suzuki, Hikari Fukuoka, and Plum Mariko. 20 minutes, 35 seconds. This was a long one, and it's a lot of Bull Nakano just rolling over JWP. If you remember on the last big show, it was Bull Nakano and Fukuoka. Did not go over well. A very boring and dull match. Incredibly disappointing. Cutie Suzuki was completely off the card at the last big show, so Plum Mariko was coming in with kind of the most momentum from Team JWP. And this was AJW kind of getting their win back in the multi-person sense. That's what was happening here. Let's see. If I read a little bit here. It was really just, I would say it was closer to LCO working like the Road Warriors and posting some bitches from JWP, and Bull Nakano coming in and doing her best, I will say her best Meng impression, and being just this mauling beast on the idol group. Let's see, did Big Dave give this any stars? It's not on Cage Match, but the Blog of Doom got it at 4.25. Don't think I'll go that high, but I really did enjoy this one too. And kind of from here on out, this card just rocks for me. Kyoko went away, Takako went away, and Yumiko Hota get their win. I wouldn't even say back, because they seem to beat LLPW up, down, and sideways every chance they get. They take on Eagle Sawai, Harley Saito, and Rumi Kazuma, coming fresh off her hair versus hair match against Hiro Hokuto in November at the big LLPW show. Did recover that on the Patreon. I enjoyed that show too. 15 minutes, 37 seconds. This was the Eagle Sawai will bump for your ass show. Holy shit. This woman took a nasty pyramid driver from Yumiko Hota right on her shoulder and neck, in which Eagle Sawai just could not believe herself. That I think Yumiko Hota, I'm going to say, I think she went into business for herself on this move. She forcefully took up a dead weight Eagle Sawai because she was not prepared. She was ready to probably reverse this move. And Hota just went, nope, we're going down, brother. And Sawai just kind of laughed it off and go, what are we doing? And there was a lot of Yumiko Hota grumpy no-selling throughout this match, which that's kind of on brand for her these days. You know what? How about this? I think she's a little jealous that she's not as popular as Kyoko Inoue. How about that? Because Kyoko Inoue at the introduction to this match, this crowd's going nuts for her. She's soaking it in. She's sticking her tongue out. Her and Eagle Sawai start this match, and the crowd's going, Kyoko, Kyoko. And she's just putting her ear like Hulk Hogan. She's, you know, pumping up like the Ultimate Warrior. That's who she's kind of modeling herself after, at least from the charisma standpoint. And she is very much easily the most popular person in this match. Rumi Kazuma, just coming off that hair match, she was given nothing. She's the smallest person in this match by far, but she has the best kicks. And the moment that kind of gives it away was when Hota was in the ring with her, and Rumi Kazuma does the straight up Insiguri fake back kick, where the kick will, the front kick will go over the person, and then she'll round out back. Kind of Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam do those kind of kicks. And even though she connects with Hota, Hota no-sells it and gets her right in and kicks her real hard. Takako Inoue kind of played a backup to Kyoko, I would say, throughout. The other like massive moves that Eagle Sawai would do was she took a German suplex from Kyoko, where she essentially went inside out and landed on her shoulder and neck again. This was nonsense. The Eagle Sawai, I think like 5 seconds after that, she charges across the ring and goes ass over tea kettle over the rope to the floor, kind of eliminating herself out of the match. We had Harley Saito kind of busting out a Michael Jackson move in the introductions, and she did the hoo-hoo-hoo. Know what I mean? I think you know what I mean. Very wacky. I was highly entertained by all this. We got things going through my head of people going to business for themselves. There's no selling. There's grumpy interpromotional stuff where Eagle Sawai and Harley Saito are trying to play along, but Team AJW is not really having it. It's like, you're not supposed to look better than us in any sort of way. And I would say once Hota did that no sell to Rumi Kazuma, she kind of got her ass out of there. She's like, I'm not going to be embarrassed by this. She's the number two star of LOPW. And I got to say, this Eagle Sawai earlier in the year really came across strong in an elimination match where she was meant to dominate. But it was also a lot of the mid-carders in AJW. You know, she's not really beating any stars. And she's certainly not being pushed as a major star in LLPW, as I've been recounting, even though she comes across like one. I mean, hell, when the match starts and Kyoko Inoue does the dip down and come in, and then she just runs into the fucking truck that is Eagle Sawai, that ruled. I mean, there's a lot of cool instances like that, a lot of big double clothesline spots. I'm not going to say Eagle Sawai didn't get a lot of shine, but she also gave AJW a lot of shine because she was bumping for him. Very interesting structurally critiqued match that I would love to get like some wrestlers in the room and give them the context of this and see what they kind of can discern and decipher from a match like this. AJW wins. And then we get to three just incredible matches in a row, each with their own unique case. I mean, I went 4.5, 4 3/4, and then 4 3/4 again for the back three matches on this card. Aja Kong, 3WA champion, yet again, not even in the semi-main, she's third from the top, defeats Megumi Kudo, retains the 3WA title, 22 minutes, 33 seconds. Big Dave gave this only 3 3/4 stars. While the Blog of Doom agrees with me that this match ruled. He went 4 3/4 on this sucker. I'm not that high. I just said it was 4.5, but look, this was one of the okay, so there's Brawls, which was the best Brawls were the Hokuto Kandori series, the two matches. Then there's the, we'll call it Moves with a Z, with the Yamada, Toyota, JWP series. And then you got this, Aja Kong versus Megumi Kudo, I'm going to say it's the best AJW worked match of the year. How about that? How about that one? You guys like that? You guys like that take, that opinion? Because Megumi Kudo really put a excellent babyface effort and really getting Aja Kong to sell well for various submission holds. Kong did not sandbag her at any step of the way, made her earn getting Kong up, which is very important. That's an old, like, Bull Nakano thing, and I think I probably said that in the last cast, where Bull Nakano, she'll sell for you, but you gotta make it look good and feel good. And that's what Kong actually took into her game here, and Kong with the back fist and timing them just right. I mean, the last one where the last sequence of events where Kong finally hits her with one and, like, kind of just blows her off her feet right onto the mat. And that actually played into the finish where she finally gets off another one and lays her down. I've seen some mixed reactions to how Kong handled the Kudo sort of knockout blow where she gets on the mic, the 10 count stops, and she kind of says, like, you're going to let this end this way? And in Kong fashion, she has to slam this mic down as hard as she can because that's all she knows how to do. Aja Kong, not a great promo, let me tell you. They all kind of yell into the mic and then slam it down real hard like they're spiking an NFL football into the end zone. But no flag on the play for this one because Kong does get back in the ring, encourages Kudo to give her one last go at it, and Kudo gets some cool near falls at the end and, of course, eats that back fist one last time. Good near falls with the German suplexes. Good little submission teasers with Kong. I don't think anyone bought that she was going to submit, but man, were we rooting for kind of the idol-esque person of FMW. There was a lot of, like, subtextual meaning behind this match where, you know, Kudo and Kong kind of debuted back-to-back with each other back in, I want to say that was 86, is when they first debuted. Let me just check that. Yeah, so I believe Kong was September 86 and Kudo was like 2 weeks later. Okay, and Kudo got out of the promotion, you know, fairly soon after that, relatively, and now she's back, and they have this big match, and Kong hugs her in the post. There's a Jaguar Yokota and Lioness Asuka on commentary, and both were trained by Jaguar Yokota early on. Yokota's in tears, looking at the excellent bout that they just put on, two of her students, and there's. I don't know if this interview is correct or not, okay? And I know there's a lot of this I don't knows, but the reality is a lot of these things are kind of lost to history, and it's a lot of speculation because it just didn't have the coverage, and there's a lot less records maintained. But supposedly, this was the final straw for Jaguar Yokota to come out of retirement, and this is where she began her efforts to start JD Star in essentially a year from now, because she starts up in 95. I believe that's when JD Star starts. And this was kind of her prime motivation that she needs to wrestle again, and she wants to train more people to make wrestling like this, what Kong and Kudo did. And again, I can't really confirm that. I wish I could. I wish these records were maintained a lot better. I wish the interviews were translated better. It's just old JD Star, like, speculation and stuff. But, you know, I mean, if you're watching this in context, and I'm watching this and I'm seeing the emotion on Yokota's face, and, you know, Kong and Kudo kind of looking at her, and Kong and Kudo embracing each other in the post. I mean, I'm a little romantic, I guess. I want to believe that. That's true. I want to believe it's true. Like I said, 4.5 stars from me. I adored this. We move on to the semi-main event. Not 2 out of 3 falls this time. Big Dave goes 5 stars yet again for the 3WA tag title bout as Dynamite Kansai and Mayumi Ozaki lose in one fall and one fall alone to Minami Toyota and Toshi Yamada. In 25 minutes, 32 seconds. Yes, another match over 20 minutes. The time clock haters and the impatient motherfuckers would absolutely hate this show. Everything's too long. They need to learn how to work a hold. You're wasting my time not going 15 minutes or less. Screw them all. This shit's awesome. I loved all of this. This was another highlight to the year as Yamada and Toyota put their mediocre singles All-Pacific title match to the side that we saw last time. Kansai and Ozaki are on their A game, and Toyo Yamada are the fucking Fantastics, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, the Young Bucks, all tied into one for this sucker. They were flipping and flying all over the place. There's a point where Toyota fucking does her moonsault and lands face and ribs first on the apron. She just goes full sideways on this sucker to the outside. Yamada's falling all over the place. Just bodies are going everywhere. It's an incredible spectacle of a bout. And look, you want to go 5 stars, you agree with Meltzer, go for it. I'm a little lower. God help me. I must have hated it. Didn't agree with the 5 stars. Let's see if I can pull some verbatim from the Blog of Doom here. Because he's got it all written out here. You know, I could do this too, but I'm doing audio work. I'm not doing the writing, because I could write my essays and just read it here, but I'm not going to do that. So let's see here. Where do I begin? Manami tries dropkick spam on Kansai. I love that. But she Samoa Joe's out of the way of one in 1993, brutalizing her with kicks again. But Ozaki Senton hits Kansai, and Manami finally wises up and tags out. Right, okay, that got me. We got Toyo to do the same kick spam. Kansai gets drilled in the chest about 5 times in a row for revenge. These are fun. Okay, here's another blurb. Ozaki powerbombs Toyota, and Kansai backdrops her straight onto her neck, but Yamada stops. Splash Mountain. Flying stomp, but the rib work avails her not, because Manami Toyota says, fuck you, bridges out. Finally, Splash Mountain hits, but Yamada's in with a kick of her own after being taken out. Crowd's chanting, Toyota! Doomsday Bulldog, no! Manami uses momentum to victory roll Kansai for a close call. Ozaki interferes, but Kansai's super backdrop is reversed. Then Ozaki flips over the ropes from a whip, takes out Yamada, leaving Toyota alone. They prepare the Doomsday Splash Mountain that won them the tag titles last match, but Toyota instead kicks Ozaki off the top. She's flipped over Kansai's shoulders. Whew. I will skip to the finish. Japanese Ocean Cyclone Suplex. No, victory roll from Ozaki. Near fall, she lifts Toyota, but Manami boots Kansai right off the top, then moonsaults her outside. Team AJW throws down their team finisher, the double flip over backdrop suplex, but Kansai breaks the count. JOCS, same result. This was one of the best. No. Perfect bridge. They get so fucking sick of interference that Manami missile drop kicks Kansai to the floor off the top rope, then hits the most insane looking thing ever on Ozaki, a straight jacket Alabama slam right into the pinfall, completely trapping her. 3 count, 25 minutes, 32 seconds. Okay, that was fun and ridiculous to do, but that straight jacket Alabama slam was garbage. It did not look good. It did not end well. That's kind of like a big reason I'm not going 5 stars, because that move was absurd, and there's a reason why I don't believe she ever tries this move again. That's why. What a match. What a wrestling spectacle that was. I'm sure everybody's going 5 stars. What does it have on Cage Match? It has a 9.6 rating. Like, again, I'm a little lower. I like the main event more. But this was definitely a high-octane match, and I highly recommend it. Very good coming after the Kong Kudo-type match. That's also why I really like these three matches in the order that they were, because they were all super different from each other. And if I'm saying anything, we need more of this in 2023. I want these kind of matches, where we have a worked match that's very much in Stardom style. We have the big tag match, which they do from time to time, for sure. I will point to the FWC Black Desire match from Stardom in 2022. Love that. That was great. That's the kind of stuff that reminds me. But they're missing brawls, which leads me into the main event. A fucking brawl. 9.17 on Cage Match. Big Dave only gave this 4 stars, so clearly he hated it. Didn't like it. Big time feel, big time rematch. This, all the gear's off, they're staring at each other, and they go to blows and shoot, punch each other. How do I know it was a shoot? Well, Kandori throws a right hook, they both go down, and Akira Hokuto's bleeding in 15 seconds with her mouth and lip busted open like it's a boxing match. Are you kidding me? These two are insane. They're maddening. Akira Hokuto gets Kandori it's like Darby Allin's Last Supper, but more of a knee bar type hold. It's like a reverse sharpshooter, and Hokuto is a disheveled mess within 1 minute. Her lipstick's all over the place. Her hair at the bottom is being stained with blood. All her teeth are red, and she's screaming. That set the pace. And the whole match is just... I was so enthralled because these two are so maddening and insane and psycho people that because they started this match with, like, legit hitting each other, I was wondering if all these other hits were shoots. Like, are they actually punching each other in the ribs? There's a scene where it's like, okay, Hokuto and clearly kind of laying up on the rib shots there, but I don't know Kandori. She's a legit shoot wrestler type, a judoka of sorts. I forget what she was. It's off the tip of my tongue, but I'm on a roll here. So these two are just beating the shit out of each other, boot washing. It feels like a fight. It feels like a brawl. Like, John Moxley, I'm sure, has watched this match before, and he's like, got an idea. Blade in 15 seconds? Great idea. I'll do that. Like, this was phenomenal. I love this. It was so different. I think it's a fitting sequel. They really tried to tease a lot of the submission moves, and Hokuto with her leg, like, you just bite on anything Kandori is going to do to that knee. And then, of course, she already has established that she's got this killer arm bar and arm holds. And with Hokuto's shoulder and arm elbow injuries, you buy that too. You think Kandori could tap this woman out at any second. And the whole match just kind of builds and builds and builds with this feeling of hatred and, dare I say, like UWF shoot fighting feel to it all, which was indeed hot at the time in Japan. So it does work even for the environment of the era. And as we get to the end, and Hokuto's on her last leg, she's on her last breath, she's getting down, Kandori is firing up and she's staying on her feet. She's doing this like big double fist clenching pose. Her legs are kind of spread out in this like dominating form of the superior human, you know? And Hokuto's getting up and Kandori throws straight punches again. So at the end, they're back to how they started this match, where they're punching each other in the face. Probably not for real at this point. And Kandori goes for an uppercut and the camera cuts. Okay. And now it's focused on the AJW roster. You got LCO, Mita, and Mima Shimoda to the side there. They're crying their eyes out. Kong has a look of just horror and sadness on her face that she's witnessing a close friend go down in glory. And then you have Suzuka Minami and company like holding Mita and Shimoda back from rushing the ring to ringside. So they're kind of stopped. And then it cuts back. It's on them for a while. And then the camera cuts back and Kandori throws another uppercut right to the chin and just pins this woman. Yeah. A like straight up boxing finish in a wrestling match for the sequel to one of the greatest women's matches of all time. LCO rushes ringside. They're crying. They're really looking at her. And Kandori and Hokuto say some words on the mic afterwards, and the crowd's distraught. What a finish to the show. 4.75 stars for this one as well. I think the first one is definitely more historical, and I do think it's the better match because it definitely has a lot more heat. It became famous for a reason. But in terms of my investment and the context of the time and this being the sequel and the heat that came along with it of it being the sequel and how unique this was, it's I have no reason to go lower for my fandom and how I came away from this match. They put a lot of emotion into it, and what a hell of a way to end the year for 1993. And we still got one more show in the Tag League Finals. You almost wish these two things were flipped. But that was Saint Final Battle. What a show. My show of the year of 1993, without a doubt. So if you're wondering what's going to happen here between episodes 86, 87, 88. So I looked up what the next like classic is going to be after. So now that I've watched all of Saint Final Battle here, because it was a three-parter in the classics. So it's 85, 86, 87. 88 skips all the way to February 18th, 1994. So we're going to miss the annual Cork and Hall show in January during, we'll call it Wrestle Kingdom Week, more or less. So, and they didn't cover that Cork in a Tag League Final. So we're definitely doing that. I'm going to see if I can't find a January show. Or even the, there's another, let me pull up 1994 here on Cage Match, because there's another one. I think it's at Ota Ward early in 94 as well. See if I can't find that one. Yeah, Ota Ward Champion Legend from January 24th. So we got the January 4th show, Cork and Hall, the January 24th show from Ota Ward, and then we can get back on track with some of these classic episodes in line. I keep saying this. We're going to kind of be flipping around here with how the classics have everything lined up, because they don't catch everything. They don't show everything, so you got to kind of go out of your way sometimes to see all this. Hell of a show, hell of an episode to do. This was an extended long one. I was very happy to do this hour-long episode of Saint Final Battle with you guys. Again, if you love these women's wrestling reviews, you love these retro reviews, come check out the Patreon, patreon.com/redleafretrocast, Joshi2010's Journey Out of the Dark Ages, going through all the major shows and matches from the 2010s of Joshi Professional Wrestling, got the LLPW reviews, and got a lot of stuff in the works involving women's wrestling. So this isn't it. We're going to continue. Got the Tag League Final in the next episode, and that'll conclude 1993 for AJW, and we go in to 1994.